Hello, Eagles fans. I'm Chris McPherson, and welcome to another edition of the Eagles Insider Podcast. And joined with me, as always, the illustrious, the soon-to-be-married, Bo Wolf.
Oh. Thank you very much. Very, very pleased to be here on the Eagles Beakley Podcast, as always.
Behind the scenes, my man Brian Thomas, as well as Chris Barletto holding it down. And our special guest this week, none other than the most prolific wide receiver.
What a treat.
In the history of the Philadelphia Eagles, a true gentleman on and off the field, the one,
a tall drink only, of water,
the great Harold Carmichael. Welcome, Harold, to the Eagles Insider Podcast. Thank you for taking a few minutes of your busy schedule.
Oh, to hang out with us. Everybody's going right now. We're the only one in this building. Right? I'm very busy right now, but no, it's great to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me here, you know, and I hear Brian over the got the crowd, like, as we got real crowd in here. Nobody's here for me.
What are you talking about?
I'm just kidding.
Harold, you have a wonderful radio voice.
You do.
I do?
Oh, thank you. Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Harold, the tallest person to ever play wide receiver in the National Football League at 6'8".
Now that the Eagles moved Alejandro Villanueva to defensive
end. Is that why? Did you tell Chip Kelly, look, Alejandro better not be coming for my record?
I have no clue who you guys are talking about right now. You know, what does he play, wide receiver or something?
He played in wide receiver in college.
But now, okay. Now he's a defensive end. Okay, yeah, okay, the defensive end, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He can't dance, I don't think.
There you go.
So, Harold, take me through, what was it like being someone who, I was reading back, you were in high school at Raines High School in Jacksonville. You're 6'6" back then. What was it like always being the tallest person out in the crowd?
Well, not really. I had another guy, one of my best friends, Luke Thomas. Luke, we were about the same height and in high school. We played basketball together, baseball together. We were on the same softball team, football team, and all of that. He was my wide receiver.
And you were the quarterback,
when I was quarterbacking back there, you know. So I kind of shot up, and I left him at probably about 6'5", pretty much, and then I kept going and all. But, yeah, it was kind of weird because there was another guy that I thought I was going to be the last one in line, but another guy, Earl, was behind me at graduation and all. So I thought I was the tallest for a minute there, but I think, did he graduate? Yeah, he did graduate, yes, you know, because he was the last guy.
Great student, that Earl.
Yeah.
Who's the more famous alum when you go back to Raines High School?
You know who it is.
You,
it's
got to
be
Brian Dawkins.
It's got to be Doc. You know, it's got to be Doc. You know, he's the fan favorite here. He's one of my favorite guys. You know, the guy's a great ball player, you know, and he's a great community leader and a mentor. And I really, really admire what he's done for the city here. And I'm quite sure he's touched Denver when he went out there. And he's always back here. So, but a lot of respect for Brian.
So how did you end up at Southern?
Okay, you know, it was crazy, you know, I can go back to my junior year when Kenny Burrows, I don't know if you guys are not old enough to remember him. Mm-hmm. He was the first guy to wear double O as a wide receiver. He went to Texas Southern, but anyway, the coaches came for him, and they also called me up to the coach's office, and they really wasn't thinking about me, but they wanted to talk to Kenny, the guys from Texas Southern. So they looked at me and said, well, we'll be back for you next year. So I said, okay. So every couple of months since then, we were getting letters from colleges and all. So the time came for us to really start, you know, choosing schools and all of that. Our running back, Blaine Geiger, he was a very good punter also, and my fullback. So his sister went to Southern, and we're talking about Southern or Grambling. So we're looking through the yearbook. We looked through Grambling's yearbook, and we looked through Southern's yearbook. So we said, we're going to Southern. We're going to Southern and stuff.
Good.
So he was getting letters, and, you know, we didn't get in touch that much. And I thought I had a scholarship. So we got on he and I got on a train together to go to Baton Rouge, and some bunch of guys coming from Miami, Tampa, and all of those guys that was also going to Southern. When we got to Baton Rouge, and they had somebody there waiting for us on the platform, say, when I call your name, throw your bags on the truck. They started calling names. My name was never called. So I'm standing there, and the guy said, well, you know, we can't leave you here. You know, get in. So, I mean, this is going to be a long story. We got time?
We got time.
No, it's not going to be too long. Anyway, we got to the on campus, went to the dormitory, and he said, when we call your name, you come up, get your key for you to go into your room. And everybody's getting the key. I sat there on the sofa.
So you knew at this point you weren't going to have a key.
I said, boy, something is wrong here. You know, so the lady that was sitting there was giving out the keys. She said, well, you need to go talk to the head coach. So I went talked to Coach Smith. Coach Smith, so he said, well, he called back, said, give him a room. So Coach Smith, we call him Coach Smitty, he saw me in Jacksonville, and he was a great friend of our head coach. They played football together, Florida A&M. So he said, but give him a key. So I went, you know, got my key, went up in the dormitory. And then the next day we went out to practice. And, I mean, like 4 o'clock in the morning, man. And, you know, walking from the dormitory to the field. And then we get to the locker room. I had nothing in my locker. You know, so I had to go to the equipment manager, and he was saying, who are you? Your name was not on their list and stuff. So they got it. We got all that stuff together. And I'm not going to go through the whole deal, but at the end of my freshman year, I was freshman of the year. You know, it was an incident how I got into playing. Guy Isaiah Robinson, Butch Robinson, he was the number one draft choice for the Rams. And he was wide receiver, and we had a guy ahead of me. I was a third wide receiver. And you know, I know I talked to the guys about how I got to get to the varsity side of it, but this is something that always is – I think about it all the way, always, and I try to run my life like that to help my family out with this same thought as always being prepared. We were playing a college out of Texas. We was in Shreveport, Louisiana. Anyway, our starting wide receiver got hurt. So the coach is looking around for the backup, Isaiah Robinson. And he was down on the far end of the bench. He was laughing and joking and, you know, wasn't paying attention. I stood behind the coach with my helmet in my hand. And he turned around and said, get in the game. And the guy that picked us up from the from the train station, we were calling him Picayune. He's from Picayune, Mississippi. He was the backup quarterback because our starting quarterback got hurt also.
Really?
So I guess this is faith, man. I've been blessed. You know, I've been very blessed. But anyway, Pick was in the game, so I went into the game, and we had a. He said, "Harold, I'm gonna throw this ball to you." I said, "Okay, all right, Pick." So I went out and ran about a 14-yard curl. Caught the ball, turned around, and got about 5 or 6 more yards. So I stayed in the game. So the next play, he said, I'm coming back to you. I said, okay. So it was a post pattern. And, you know, you guys won't remember, but I was never fast at all. I mean, I was about slow as frozen syrup, you know. And
you had those long strides.
Yeah.
Fooled a lot of people. So I went down, I faked the guy outside, and I broke to the post. And as I usually like to put this in motion, but, you know, when I broke and I turned around and I saw the ball come out of Picayune's arm, the guy could throw a football to him. It was all spiraling. It was a night game, and you can just see the white, you know, we had the white stripes on the football and stuff. And so, and I'm running. I look back, and then I get my head back trying to catch up with this ball. So by the time the ball got me, I reached out with one hand, and I got drilled by the defensive back. Hit me, the ball went up in the air. So I just kept my eyes on the ball, like, and I fell back with the other hand, caught it with one hand, and I pulled it in, and I fell back, and I hit my head on the ground, and you can hear the stars, and see little birds flying around and stuff. You know, I think that was the first concussion I had, really. But anyway, when I fell down, and I came to, I guess, you know, and I looked down, and I saw the black shoes, and I saw a white pants, and then I looked all the way up at his striped shirt, and then his arms went up, touchdown. Nobody played that position but me from the next 3.5 years.
Wow.
You know, and I've always said, always, you know, when your number is called, always be prepared. Be ready to go. And that's what happened to me. And I try to tell guys that story all the time so they can understand when somebody calls your number, you got to be ready when you go in there, and then you got to perform.
So had you played wide receiver in high school at all?
Yeah. Some of the times when I was a played wide receiver and had nobody throw the ball to me. you know, we had a guy that had a pretty decent arm, but he wasn't that tall and all that. So they kept me a quarterback back and forth. But I only scored one touchdown in high school, and I threw one touchdown pass. And I guess that's why I didn't get a scholarship.
Well, you look at those hands. It's no surprise you're able to bring the ball with one hand.
Well, you know, a lot of people talk about my hands. Have you seen Michael Bamira's hand?
Yeah, but he's not a receiver.
Right. This guy's hand is about 2 inches longer than mine. His fingers are 2 inches, almost 1.5 inches longer than my hands. And he has big hands. I would never drop balls and stuff, you know. But
yeah, but if he could run a post pattern, then it'd be a different story.
Right. Exactly. You know, and I did it. You know, it was okay. I was all right.
And yet you still got underrated, falling all the way to the seventh round.
Seventh round, you know, they told me I was going to, you know, the agent's telling you, but you should be going between the first and third round. And sitting there, and the head coach gave us this big console TV. It was bigger than this table right here, you know. And we took it up in my dormitory room just to watch, listen and watch the draft. You know, the same way, but back then you only had 2 days on the draft. And I didn't understand it the first time I was sitting there. The guy, Isaiah Robinson, he went number one with the Rams, and my another guy went number three. My roommate went number five. Another guy went six. So they said, well, that's the end of the draft. So I said, oh, I guess I'm not going to get drafted. Mm-hmm. So we went out and had a couple of beers, and I came back. And being in it was a mixed sports dormitory. We had the baseball team, the basketball team, and everybody's in there. So the baseball teams, they were teasing all of the football players, you know, the guys that never played, you know, they were probably on special team. They said, hey, your agent called, and, you know, you got drafted like that. So when I came back in the dormitory.
Well, what was, like, the phone situation?
Well, the phone down the hall in the hall. You know, the hall was a payphone.
A little payphone, right?
It was a payphone, right. Yeah, we didn't have cell phones back then. Sure, you know. Back. So when I got back, one of the guys said. No, they were drums. Okay. Cans on a string wasn't even invented then. You know, it was just drums that we played, you know. But so when I got back, guy said, Harold, you got your agent call. I said, oh, come on, man, get out of here. He said, yes, your agent call. You know, my agent's name back at the time was Zip Varicola.
And that's great.
And I said, well, I know nobody to know this guy. So I called him back, and he said, yes, you got drafted by the Eagles in the seventh round. I said, I didn't care. You know, you're talking about round. Right. You know, I said, oh, I got drafted back, you know. But then again, I'm thinking back. They said first or second round, you know, the first or third round. But anyway.
Thanks a lot, Zip.
Yeah, well, I'm going to finish this story. So he said, yes, you got drafted by the Eagles in the seventh round, and they're going to be calling you tomorrow. So when they call you tomorrow, can you tell them this? I said, whoa, I thought you were going to be my agent. You're supposed to talk. He said, well, I got these number one draft choices, and I got these guys, you know, a lower round draft choice than you. So, you know, I'm going to be busy with that. So if they're going to call you, tell them this. I said, oh, boy, okay. So the Eagles called me and said, congratulations, we're going to send you a contract down. You can sign it. And also they sent the contract down. I looked at the contract, $13,000. I said, okay, well, you know, and a $5,000 bonus, you know, signing bonus. Signed it off, sent it back. And when I came up here, you know, just going through the rookie thing, really checking things out, you know, in awe of a new city, big city like Philadelphia was. And
what do you know about the city?
Nothing. I've been up a few times because I have a lot of relatives right out by the airport and over New Jersey, New York. So I was up a few times, but I was never in the city, never went downtown Philadelphia. It was mostly, you know, out mostly in New Jersey and a couple of places in Philly at the time. But been here ever since. It was trying to make the team. The first week of practice, I fell on my thumb and dislocated it. I had to put a cast on it, and that really blew me away because I said, I just hurt my moneymaker, you know, in my hands, and you still see it. It's all messed up, my thumb. And they put it on the cast, the first time I was in downtown Philadelphia. They had to drive me back into Philadelphia to get my down to Graduate Hospital to get my finger back, you know, in place. And after that, I walked around downtown Philly like old country boy. You know, I said, whoa, look at these big buildings and stuff. And back then, you know, Philly didn't have the big buildings that they have now. So I was very in awe. So went back, and the first thing I did when I went back was trying to soften this cast on the hand. And I got the ball, was hit the ball, you know, trying to get this thing. So I'm trying to get in the, it was still a little wet, so trying to get my hands so I can bend my fingers. I had to ask the doctor to put this cast on in a way that, you know, put less cast as I need on here. So probably by the end of that following week, I was catching balls with one hand with that cast on my hand and stuff, you know. So I got used to that cast, and finally we took it off. So, you know, seventh round. There's a video that Ray Dettinger sent to me when he was working with the NFL film, and his, it was something like Lost Treasures or something like that. And they had
the cast?
Huh? No. It was a shot of O.J. Simpson and their John. I can't think of his last name, but he was the number one draft choice for Buffalo. And it's a video of them, you know, you don't even see me. We're in Franklin Field, that because the vet wasn't even ready then. We had to play our first two preseason games at Franklin Field. And all you could hear was the crowd cheering us, you know, cheering. And you hear O.J. says, "Who's that guy? Who's that number 17? Who's that?" You know, I said, "The guy's going to Carmichael." "Carmichael? Where's he? What school he go to?" "Southern University." There's O.J. saying all these things. And Southern University. And he said, "Well, what round he's in?" "It's seventh round." OJ says, "Seventh round? All those computers," and he got him in the seventh round. And it's the same thing I felt, you know. You know, I go in seventh round there, and I think about that because a lot of people say that, you know, how you guys sometimes when you want me to do something, y'all try to juice me up and pump me up and like that, you know. But the best part of when people talk about you is what they say when you're not around. And you don't know what they're saying about you. But that's something that always would stick in my head. And, a lot of these experiences that I've had, you know, they kind of make me try to, you know, be the right person and saying what type of person they really think you are, you know, when people talk about you when you're not around, you know. So that's a piece that I always try to show a lot of the young guys and say, this is what you want to do. You know, people going to tell you all these good things right in front of your face, but what do they say when you're back, when you're not there? You know how that is, right, guys? You know?
Oh, people say stuff about me behind my back all the time.
Oh, yeah, you can't wait. We finish here.
Yeah.
So nowadays, they have the Rookie Symposium and all these programs to help get the rookies acclimated to life in the NFL. What did they have for you, and what was that transition like going from, you know, from Jacksonville to Southern to Philadelphia, and now getting paid to play football, being in a big city? What was that transition like for you?
I was very blessed to have good people around me. Guys like Ben Hawkins and Harold Jackson. These guys were great wide receivers here. They taught me a lot. Watching these guys, again, it's things that these guys would say, but the thing that meant most to me was what they did. You know, I want to see what they, you know, how they react with people, dealing with people, you know, work in a room, which it took me a while to learn how to work a room and, you know, go to talk
really?
With people. I was standing in the corners when he really talked to guys. But
are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. You know, watching people, that's what really, that's how I kind of learned how to do things, you know. Even all the way up until in the late 80s, watching people like Ron Jaworski and Bill Berge, how they would, you know, deal with people, dealing with the fans and stuff. I just considered myself kind of shy back in the days. I really, unless you said something to me, I'm not going to say anything to you, you know. But now you guys see me now, you know, I can't stop
totally
talking.
Different.
So I can't stop
totally
talking
different.
Sometimes, you know, you're seeing that right now. But
you're making up for lost time.
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, those are the things that really, that I really treasure, watching people, learning from people. I learned, you know, we talked about the Rookie Symposium, watching how my counterparts were dealing with their players and watching players, what they thought and what they felt about different things. And so, you know, it kind of helped me see how people work, and then I molded myself and trying to make sure I'm doing the right things. And so because people watching me, I know they watch me all the time. And so, you know, I try to do the right things because I was just talking to Connor Barron just now. I said, "Man, you're doing a great job," and not only because of, you know, the concert you put on, but the things that you're doing in the community, and people are watching you. The young guys are watching you, and they're seeing what you do, and that it's gonna, you know, it's gonna make them better.
Was there a, you know, coming in as a seventh round pick from Southern? Was there a point where it hit you that, you know what, I can play in this league. I can be, you know, I can be a bad man here.
Yes, you know, it took a while because, you know, a lot of my confidence fell when I did my my thumb.
Right.
You know, I said, you know, what am I going to do now? And really prayed about it and thought how I was going to do this. And like I said, I prepared myself after that injury. And one of the funny things also was after practice, you know, all the rookies would get in the run, come in somebody's room, and so we sit there and talk. And this is like the third or fourth week in training camp. We had six preseason games, and we was in training camp for about 2 weeks before that. So we were we go into a room and start talking, and some, you know, you hear guys, oh man, I don't know, I'm going to get cut. I know I'm going to get cut. And I would say, man, I knew what you're talking about. I don't feel comfortable. Everybody just turned at one time. Harold, shut up, you know, because they knew I was catching everything that was around me. And God, you know, the lessons that I learned, and which I tell these guys, I say, catch every ball. It doesn't have to be catch in your hand. Just catch the ball. Wherever they throw the ball, catch the ball. Because when a quarterback is desperate and the person that they're supposed to throw it to, they know where they're going to throw. They can throw the ball to you and you're going to catch it. And, you know, I know they used to call plays for other receivers, and the quarterbacks would just glance at them, then they come right back to me, throw the ball, because they knew I was going to catch the ball. Regardless, if it was close by, I was going to get it. So that's when I kind of knew, you know, the second or third week in training camp, I felt like I was going to be okay there. Because, you know, I tell rookies today, I say, all of this stuff, players got drafted the year before, and they come back and tell you about the NFL, when you get to the NFL, you're going to find out it's not exactly like that, because you're a different person. You know, it's going to be different. When you get here, when you get up in with the big boys, it's a little different than when they're playing with you in high school and college. You know, everything's so much faster.
Harold, in your third season, you led the league in receptions and yards. What made the proverbial light go on for you? What came together for you to become a dominant receiver?
Well, you know, the first great thing about that whole situation is when this is going on with Watergate. You guys don't remember Watergate, you know, this thing they had with Nixon and stuff, the tapes and all of that. Well, I was really at home off season watching that. I remember laying on the sofa watching the Watergate trial, and the phone rang. My mom called me and said, it's a phone. So, you know, it was the
it was Richard Nixon.
not this time, no. It was Mike. Thank you. It was Mike McCormick, the head coach at the time. And he said, well, we just traded Harold Jackson, and you're going to be the starting wide receiver for us. And, I mean, I'm just bubbling up inside. Like, I'll say, okay, coach. Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, baby. And I say that after we hung up, and I just start screaming and hollering. And my mom said, what's wrong with you? I said, you know, they just told me I'm going to be the starting wide receiver for the Eagles now. And she started, okay, because she had no clue what I was talking about anyway. So nowadays, you know, I always go back to the younger guy. I set that bar at 3 years. You know, some guys do it before the first or second year, which some guys have done, making all pro and making a Pro Bowl, leading receivers and all that. I set that bar at 3 years. I said 3 years, and I tell a lot of guys today, I said, you should be – what year is this for you? They say third. So you should be all pro this year. You know, if it's in your heart to do this, if this is what you really want to do, if it's very important for you to do this, you should be all pro this year. So, you know, my experiences – that's what I talk to guys about, because if I can do it, anybody can do this, you know, because again, you saw in high school, I wasn't the greatest, with my stats, the greatest player in high school. And, I really don't even know how many catches I had in college. I don't even know if they was keeping count back then, it's just what I felt that I had to do, and it wasn't about anything around me, material things. It was just I wanted to be the best that I could be. But I, you know, today I really think that I could have been better.
You think they would have made you a tight end in today's NFL?
Yeah, probably so. Probably so. You know, they would have done that. In fact, when I first came to Philadelphia, when I came with the Eagles and all, I played three positions. what they call it. I played X, Y, and Z. And it was times I was, you know, all week I was studying, playing the X position. And they come up, the coach would come up and say, did you study tight end? You're going to play some tight end. And I hated tight end. I was about 219 pounds in there, man. They were just throwing me around like laundry, man.
At 6'8".
Yeah. Oh, boy. You know, I tried to do my best in there, but then again, they probably said, well, he has no business in there. Put him out there. Get him outside somewhere. You know, so maybe these days, you know, I wasn't big, you know, heavy enough to really play tight end. And I could not gain weight. I tried to gain weight, could not. Everybody said I was 225, but I would get off the field sometimes. I was 216, 219, 216.
Because you're just eating those crabs all the time.
I was going to say, those crabs don't help you gain any weight there?
No, because how much work you got to do to get crabs?
You got to dip them in butter, though.
Yeah, you got to be careful in what you're talking about, crabs. A lot of people are talking.
That's what I'm saying.
I can see Bo, you know, over there, you know, what is that?
Well, guess who? Rolling. Bo. Yeah.
Guess who the crabs?
But no, a lot of these things that happened to me, that's what I kind of based a lot of other things for, you know, talking to the young guys about.
You host a cookout every year. The reason I mentioned the crabs is you host a cookout and just had it recently where you cook crabs for the players. When did that start? How did that come about? That's just a recipe you had from growing up, or?
Well, pretty much, yeah. We used to cook crabs in the big wash pots back in the day over open fires and stuff. But I kind of graduated from that now. But every year in training camp, once a year, I would do crabs for the staff, because most of the players would be gone. You know, they had a day off. So I would do it the night that we have off, and I'd get about two or three bushels of crabs and do them. And, you know, like we said just the other night, we did them here. I did about 2.5 bushels here, and they all went. You know, I guess I don't know how many of you guys were eating, but we had none left. I couldn't even take any home. But you know, they're pretty good. There's some crabs I get from over New Jersey, and
so I was going to ask you, where's
over
the spot?
Over the Crab Plus on Mount Ephraim Avenue in Camden. Okay. You know, I got to give Mike.
There's a little drop right there.
Mike is a great guy. He's helped us out a lot with the crabs, making sure that we get some nice sized crabs and all. And anybody can do crabs. You know, it's the seasoning.
The seasoning is
he sells the seasoning that they get it from Maryland somewhere that somebody had. Well, the guy that used to own the place, he had a special blend that they still make for these guys. And I've been buying crabs from these guys for about 30 years now. And it's the same seasoning, you know. And I'm not trying to knock Old Bay, but Old Bay is overrated. It's overrated, you know, just like Tabasco sauce, you know, overrated. You know, got to get some of that Crystal.
I like the Crystal. Crystal over Tabasco?
Oh,
Crystal's,
yes.
Crystal's not bad.
Yeah, because it's the flavor. It's not the heat.
What about Sriracha? You got any Sriracha in you?
No, we don't have any of that stuff. Anybody have a dictionary? But no, I have no idea about that stuff. It's just that seasoning that we have, you know. Is that what is it anyway?
Sriracha? It's another kind of hot sauce. Yeah. It's Indian, yeah. But it's
No.
They got it in the cafeteria. You've probably tried it.
But I only get that
big bottle of the red stuff.
Yeah, no. I get the Crystal and the hot sauce. Hot stuff. You know,
that does it right.
Yeah.
How tough was it? So you become one of the best receivers in the National Football League, but you came during a time when the franchise struggled. How tough was it individually being so great, but the team not being able to make the playoffs?
Well, you know, you felt bad. You know, I felt bad a lot of times because, you know, you worked, you know, the way I worked, I worked to win. And we had a problem. You know, I always used to say we had three teams. We had a team coming in, a team playing, and a team leaving. It was times when we'd go out to practice, and before I went out there, this guy was in the locker next to me. And when I came back in, that locker had a new guy in it. You know, so we was always bringing in guys and they was trying to find that fit. And it took us a while. It took us really pretty much the 76, 1976, when Dick Vermeil came in, that he kept about 12 of the guys that was on the past teams, and he built around that. And we finally went to the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, we didn't win it. But, you know, it felt great that, you know, I look at the video and we talk about it a lot of times. I hate to get to the Super Bowl part because that was the really downtime, but you know, the work that we put in to get there. You know, Dick Vermeil was a hard worker. His first year here, we thought the man was crazy from working us that hard. And thank goodness he would let us drink water. But before then, we couldn't drink water.
Is that amazing?
You know, we only had a water break every now and then and stuff. You know, you'd be really dehydrated, and a lot of guys would, you know, passing out, you know, because of the heat. But they brought in the rule where you got to let them drink water, you know. And we needed it, gosh, you know, the way he worked us, you know. And it took a while for us to really buy in. It took us maybe about a couple of weeks to buy in for what Coach Vermeil was trying to, you know, instill in us. And some of the stuff that he was talking, he told us about the way he coached, it's the things that I still use and for my family and for myself.
Why did you and eventually everyone buy in? Because everyone talks about how tough he was and how much of a workaholic he was, but he seems so beloved to this day that you would never hear someone say a bad word about him.
Well, the thing about it was some of the things that he would do. You know, we couldn't take our helmets off in practice. And the couple of days we had to keep our helmets on. I mean, I don't care if it was how hot it was, to keep your helmet on. And then maybe the next day, he said, well, you could, at least you can unfasten your chin strap. Then you can unbuckle your chin strap. And then maybe a couple of days later, you know, you can't. Then now you can take your helmet off. That type of stuff, we said, well, what, you know. And it took us a while to understand that he was trying to instill discipline in us, you know, that he was the boss. After a while, we said, okay, I got it now. We understand what he's done. Great person. You know, when you sit and talk to him, he was not that. He was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Off the field, oh, gosh, you love this guy. On the field, you want to shoot him. You know, but, you know, after a while, you knew what he was trying to do. And you know, it enlightened me about a lot of things where coaches do. You find coaches have their own little way to gain that respect, you know, committing themselves to, you know, discipline, you know, that the players are doing that, you know, and I understood it, and I understand it now when I, you know, see some coaches do some things, I say, you know, especially new coaches, you got to, you know, say, I'm the boss.
Mm-hmm. What was 1980 like?
Oh, but in the city was great. I mean, everybody was on fire. You know, the whole city was winning. You know, the Sixers were winning. The Phillies were winning. You know, the hockey team, but they was coming. You know, they were winning, and Eagles were winning. And this city, oh, man, it was an exciting year, man. You know, all of the, again, going back to what I said earlier, all of the things that, all of the time, the sweat, the blood, the tears, the joy, all of these emotions really just – yeah, and I kind of said on one of the interviews they had, you know, you just wanted to burst with it because, you know, I can just speak for myself. I worked hard, you know. I kind of smile with that too because a lot of guys, you know, I look guys now, they're working, training almost 11 months out of the year now. And I said, when we, back in the day, we played and then we played. You know, we played for 6 months, and the 6 months we was off, we played, you know. And that's why I say I think I could have been better if I would have just worked out like these guys are doing today, you know. But it was a fun time, a great time, you know, and it was about almost like 2004 here, you know. It was a great atmosphere, you know. Anything you wanted in the city, they were giving it to you, you know. I talked to the mayor one time, and I just happened to mention that I wanted a dog. He said, "Go get your dog." it was fun, a lot of fun.
What do you recall about the championship game against Dallas?
It was so cold. That whole week we were at the Vet, and everything that lived in the Vet pretty much was dead. You know, the rats, there was no mice, yeah, there was rats, right, over there. The cats, there were birds dead in there. You know, it was just a cold, cold winter that year. That week was very cold. And gosh, I was, you know, trying to figure out how I was going to stay warm and all. And Dallas has always been known, ever since that game, I knew Dallas. They always come here and start thinking about the cold. That's why I used to love for it to be cold when we played Dallas, because they were always thinking about, oh, it's so cold out here. But it was a great game. watching Wilbert score that touchdown, everybody talk about it. Nobody saw the block that I threw. I missed my man completely. I laid on the ground and watched Wilbert rush. Run, please. Go. Missed my block completely. But it was a great day, a great game for us. You know, the whole city was just bubbling.
What will it be like when the Eagles win the Super Bowl?
Scary. Very scary here. You know, you want to be careful in going downtown because there's so many things to be going on down there. You know, it would be amazing for this city. And I really, really want to see it. I want to video this whole thing. And I would love to be up on one of the Comcast building over there just to video this whole thing because it will be insane with the people, the way the people will act around here. You know, because we are so hungry for it. For a Super Bowl, a Super Bowl win, you know, I just would love to see it for the Philadelphia. You know, I know we want to do it for me, but really to see it for the city of Philadelphia, to see people just enjoy themselves, and then they don't have to keep hiding when somebody, when you talk about, okay, we beat the Giants, and everybody's talking about, they got two Super Bowl rings. You know, you talk about the Cowboys, three or four Super Bowl rings. You know, you want to get at least one, and you can get a one shot in. You know, and that might be a knockout blow, you know.
Well, I hope you're in the parade, Harold.
I would love to. You know,
I don't want you to be at the top of the Chairman. Comcast building. I want you to be in the
No, well, no, I would love the video. I don't care. You know, it would be. It would
you don't
be
want to hold that trophy going down Broad Street?
I tell you what, I can come in here and hold it afterwards, you know, because it's the guys that played in the game. It's their trophy, too. You know, and they have, you know, and you know, as I tell you guys, it's not my time anymore. You know, you guys should be talking to those guys anyway. You know, people don't want to hear about what I'm doing anyway.
That's not true.
You know, but, you know, I let those guys really enjoy enjoy that day, you know, because I know I will. So, I know, and I tell you what, I'll be jumping for joy.
Well,
and I hope it's this year. I really do.
You know? So do we. You've been talking about, you know, you said you could have been better. But you know, and how you've been overlooked since high school, not getting recruited, seventh round. But you finished your career fifth all time in receptions, seventh all time in receiving yards, seventh all time in receiving touchdowns. Do you feel like you've been overlooked for the Hall of Fame? Because we certainly do.
Well, you know, that's for the committee of the Hall of Fame. You know, yeah, I would be lying if I said yes, I would love to be in the Hall of Fame and all, but I want to go. It's people choose me, not people begging somebody else to, you know, to bring me, you know, to vote me into the Hall of Fame. I would love to be in there, and the Hall of Fame is being in the Hall of Fame is something that you need to do while you're living, you know.
Yeah.
You need to enjoy that. I see a lot of guys, they want to do it after somebody's died or something like that. They need to do it, and I'm not saying that I'm going to die soon, hopefully.
No. No,
you know, but, you know, I would love to be in there, you know, and be a part of the Hall of Fame that, you know, that I can come back here and have, you know, be around people for them to enjoy me also, you know. So, yes.
Do you think you should be in?
Well, I don't know. You know, they haven't voted me in yet. So, you know, maybe, you know, I look at some of the numbers. I look at some of the guys that's in the Hall of Fame. My numbers are better than theirs. I think the biggest thing, we didn't win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, you see a lot of guys that's in it now. You kind of wonder why, you know. But, you know, then again, I, you know, on the side, I kind of figure out why they're in there.
Right.
You know, so.
And, of course, it hurts that, I mean, the league has become such a passing league. So, you know, Pro Bowl guys who are not Hall of Fame level guys may have more career totals than you. But that's not how you judge. You judge against your competition, against your peers. And
yeah, and, you know, how you contributed to the team a lot of times, you know. So, you know, there's, you know, there are people out there, the committee out there, they know who they want, you know. And I think one of the biggest things also is that when you have the dinner before, the night before, they want to put butts in the seat, you know, and that's a big thing. You know, if guys, maybe if I was on one of the sports talk shows or whatever, maybe, you know, maybe I could get in there because, you know, people going to want to be around those guys that they see now. Yeah. People don't even remember because, again, as you said earlier, the numbers are different now. You know, they throw the ball. You know, when the majority of the time when we play run, pass.
Right.
Pass, run. You know, something like that. You're going to get more runs in a lot of times than you're going to get passing in. So the numbers will go up. You know, I led the league with 67 catches. 67. Backup tight ends are catching that many now. You know, fullbacks are catching 67 passes a year now. So, you know, you're looking at guys 120 passes a year. You know,
hello.
Gosh, you're right. it's crazy, man, with the numbers. And I think he was able to have more numbers if we, you know, we had a passing league back then.
What's the one accomplishment that you're most proud of? You have all the Eagles records. At one point, you had the NFL's longest consecutive game streak for a reception. What did that reach? It was
127.
127.
Is it the picture? Is it the picture of you shirtless with John Travolta? Is that what you're most proud of?
Showing that eight pack. Yeah, yeah, I know. You know, I've been asked that question a lot of times. You know, and
now you're actually going to tell the truth.
It's tough to tell the truth about this. You know, but no, it's really, I think about it a lot. There are so many things that's happened in my life that has been milestones for me. Pretty much, you know. Again, starting back from where I started from. You know, going back to where I started from, you know, been in high school and stuff, not getting, you know, a scholarship. Well, you know, in the beginning, getting a scholarship, you know, going in seventh round, that type of stuff. You know, all that has been, to get drafted was the first thing, you know. And the next thing, you know, I have to say it's a few things, you know, leading the league, that was awesome for me, you know. But another time was like, you know, I didn't score in the game. Well, I did score, but they called the touchdown back during the NFC Championship game against Dallas. That was very exciting. Going to the Super Bowl was very, very exciting for us, you know, for me. And, man, you know, man of the year. There are so many things. I've been blessed with so many things, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's just really tough to put my finger on just one thing. And just, you know, I say just counting my blessings, man. You know, it's been awesome. It's been a great ride for me, and then being able to come back here and work for this, my 17th year back with the team, you know, it's really, you know, I can't, you know, I just put my finger on one thing.
So I don't know, I'm sure people have talked to you about this before, but there's this idea that we would like the Guinness Book of World Records to recognize you as the man who has caught more footballs in his life.
Oh, gosh.
Than anybody ever. Because think about it. For those who don't know, you know, the 17 years you've been here, you're also out of practice catching balls from the quarterbacks during warm-ups. So that's a whole nother career's worth of catching passes in practice. Do you think that's fair that you have caught more passes than anyone in the history of the world?
I don't think anybody's caught more passes than me, man. I tell you, you know, I think about even going home, you know, throwing balls around with my son, you know, when he was in, and then helping out Gloucester Catholic when he was going to school there, catching footballs and throwing footballs with those guys. And then right now we can have a cookout at my house and some friends and then bring the kids over. And I said, but come on, let's catch. I said, he'll get away from me. I'm catching footballs today, man. You know, no, but, as you said, you caught a lot of footballs and, you know, I'm catching every day from the quarterbacks today. Man, a lot of footballs, yeah. You know, I wish I could really count these things up. You know, and I can't imagine. It's got to be over 100,000.
Wow. It's got to be over that. Yeah, I think it's got to be more than that.
Yeah, I'm quite sure it is, man. And, you know,
do the quarterbacks take it easy on you these days, or they go full force?
Well, you know, they test my hands, you know, and I have, you know, they always try to throw it hard. And, you know, my fingers are really sore right now because last year we had a rookie throwing a ball too hard. He's 5 or 6 feet from me, and he's throwing a ball like he's 100 yards away, and I stopped catching for him. I let one of the ball boys catch for him, and he used to kill the little kids, you know, trying to catch those balls.
Was it GJ?
I'm not going to call it.
He's not going to throw anybody under the bus.
It's not throwing the bus. It's just, you know, showing off his arm.
Are his initials DD?
I'm not mentioning any names. Okay? Let's drop it right now. I like these guys still. Yeah. You know, yeah.
Harold, when's the last time you dropped a pass? You always tell me, you told you something you never drop a pass.
Oh, I've never, you know, I dropped a week before last. I dropped two in a row right in front of the news media and everybody. I'll drop passes. You play enough balls thrown to you, you're going to drop a lot of passes. You know, and I tell the players that's why you got to have, you know, a short memory because I tell guys to get their heads down when they drop the ball in practice. And after practice, I see them at lunch. I say, hey, man, come and keep your head up. I say, you know, you play this game long enough, you're going to drop a lot more. you know, because, you know, even the best, the Hall of Famers just dropped a lot of passes, you know, because if you throw the ball a lot, you're going to drop them.
At the tail end of your career, Mike Quick came in and took over as a starting receiver, put up big numbers your last year in Philadelphia. Do you wish you had a chance to play longer alongside him? Because one of my favorite things going on road trips now is when you're on the bus from the plane to the hotel or to the game, it's just hearing the two of you crack jokes, tell stories, you know, let loose. Do you wish that you guys had a longer playing career together?
Yeah, it would have been great, you know. But you know, towards my the end of my career, you know, I would compliment him. You know, Mike is a great receiver. We were talking about him last night. Some of the catches. I was talking to some of the fans and guests that we had last night here. The guy was describing one of the plays that he made. You know, he has the he tied a record in the longest touchdown pass in history. With 99 yards, and I watched him do that, and just watching this guy play, he's graceful. I struggled to run, you know, to run. He's just so smooth. The strides that he makes, the catches. I saw a picture of him. He's mugging the defensive back and catching the ball with one hand. You know, laying out. You know, great receiver. And yes, would have loved to play with him longer, but. No, but then again, no. It was time for me to get out of football, you know, and
you had to get that one catch with the Cowboys.
Yeah, well, that was not fault. You know, I did go that Monday and pick up a check. About 10 Mondays. You know, so, you know, I did that, I couldn't come back here in a Cowboy uniform. I was really glad that they released me before we came back here. We did play the Eagles. I hate saying it that way. Well, the Cowboys played the Eagles in Dallas, and I got a chance to see a lot of the guys in there. I didn't play in the game. So, like I said, only played in two games. To this day, I don't know why they brought me down in Dallas. I was tired of playing football. I was tired of getting hurt and tired of being a target, you know. So I was ready to get out. As soon as Tom Landry said, we're going in a different direction. I say, good, because I am too. I'm going back to Philly. But it was a great time that, you know, I enjoyed the time down there being with guys that I played against for years. Dorsett, Too Tall. These guys.
Who was taller?
Too Tall.
Really?
Too Tall, yes. But he couldn't deal with me on the basketball court. Right. I blocked a lot of his shots. We played pickup basketball games and we killed him.
I see you as like a George Gervin on the basketball court.
Who?
I see you as like a George Gervin. That's your game, right?
Gervin.
That was me, man. You know, if I could dribble, I would have never played football. I could never dribble. You know, keep me. If I just hit one dribble, and if I'm close to the basket, that's it. If I'm four away from passing, and until I get closer to the basket, then you throw it back to me. Then I can shoot it.
Why do you think you are so prepared to make the transition into life after football, where a lot of players seem to struggle with what to do once their career is over?
Well, and a lot of times it's having the right people around you. You know, these guys these days have a lot of people telling them how good they are, that they should do this, to, you know, spend money on this, on that. And I just had real, you know, I got friends down in Jacksonville, Florida that I grew up with, kind of keep you grounded. I always say, remember where you come from. You know, and I never forget that. And just being genuine to people, you know, and just being that way, it'll help the adjustment. A lot of people don't understand that a lot of guys have problems with their spouses, because not only they have a problem trying to, you know, adjusting after football, their spouse also have a difficult time doing that. So, my wife is, you know, stuck with me. I guess I was still in football, but, you know, no, but I was out of football for about 10 years and all. But she's just, we still together, you know, and there's just a few of us that still married to the same lady that we were married when we played the game. So,
you got a role model here for Bo.
Yeah, what kind of advice you got for me, Harold?
I said, you know, don't sweat the little things, Bo. You know, don't worry about where the couch is going to be placed, what color the walls are going to be painted. You know, I know you probably want to do some flowering now, you know, gardening outside, you know, but, you know, let the wife, you know, if she said put it over there, Bo, and just leave it alone. You know,
I could do that.
And if you got to do the dishes, Bo.
I can do that. I'll let her do the flour.
Easy enough. See? So simple. You talked about Dick Vermeil. What are your thoughts on Chip?
Like what Coach Kelly's doing, he's it's innovation, but not, you know, quite sure somebody in the past has done something like this before, you know. But I like what he does, you know, the speed of the offense and the speed of the defense, you know, because defensively you don't have to be that fast. But then again, they learn to be fast because some team may have a hurry up offense. So you got to be ready for that. So I like what the things that he's put together, the players that he put together. I like that we've gotten bigger offensively and defensively on the offensive line and defensive line. I like just about everything he's doing right now, and they're doing a great job. He has a great coaching staff with him and a lot of support people around him also.
Some thoughts on, you know, this last generation of guys who have been here while you were here over the last 15, 17 years. Who are some of your favorite guys off the field?
Oh, man, there's a bunch of guys, man, I really enjoy being around, you know. And, you know, I had a lot of good relationship with Donovan, Trey Thomas, great with Deuce, a great relationship also right now with Brent Celek. You know, these guys, he's been solid, you know, on the field, off the field, you know, in the community. I'm liking what Connor Barwin is doing right now. I just talked to him about an hour or so ago. Really liking to see, liking the things that he's doing in the community. And just, like I said, man, you know, I just can't, you know, you look at Fletcher Cox, you know, oh man, there's so many guys out there, man, that you really enjoy being around that, you know, you feel that you get the respect from also, you know.
Who has changed the most over the course of their Eagles career? Maybe came in weird as a rookie and grew into a man with you watching.
I like the thought of weird.
Yeah, I'm trying to think that weird. You get a bunch of weird people,
or just immature. I mean,
or shy. You know, maybe shy like you who came in the shell. Or
well, some of those guys are not here. You know, these guys that's around now. Weren't around when I first got here. So, you know, I've been 17 years, so there's nobody been here that long. But you look at the maturity of, I guess you could say, like Celek, you know. He's getting it. He gets it. Todd Harriman, you know, I think he's getting it now. A lot of these guys now understand what it takes. It's not only just being a great football player, it's being a great person. Again, being that person that you are when nobody else is around you, you know, doing the right things when people are watching you, what you portraying to them, you know, a good guy, bad guy, or some guy, maybe a weird guy, as you say, there's
Dominic Rogers, Cromartie, weird guy,
Dominic.
Yeah. He was an interesting guy.
Just talked about him with Connor. I tell you, one of the greatest athletes I've seen on the football field.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know,
amazing talent, no question.
Great
also
talent.
Wore a Batman, you know, outfit to work one day.
Yeah, he's won a lot of crazy stuff, man. You know, and that's weird sometimes.
His,
you know,
his plane outfits were awful.
Oh, well, yeah, crazy and, you know, stuff. But, you know, again, those types of people, they draw attention. It's what you do when that attention starts to come to you and say something to you. There's a lot of guys do this thing, but when the fan come up and want to talk with you, then you say, hey, no, get back. You know, I don't want to talk to you. I don't have time for you. Those guys that can dress like that, and then when a person comes to talk to them, be cordial, very polite to people, those are the guys that you look at and say, you know, he understands it, regardless of what he wears, you know. But Dominic, I talked to him a lot when he first got here, and it's just what people see a lot of times, you know, is, you know, how you portray yourself, you know, gosh, how you look, people, you don't want people to be scared of you, you know, and I talked to a lot of these guys, like, to be careful on what you got on, what you're dressing and how you're acting, because you can lose a lot of money and a lot of fan appreciation for you is according to how you look when they look at you.
How do you think you would have handled the media and social media if you were playing?
I don't know, you know, because that's you guys' thing right now. You know, back in the day, you know, you only talked on the telephone. You know, you had to go to the pay telephone, phone booth to do it, you know. You, or then, you know, and after a while, you still got the phone in the car, you know, your car phone and stuff. But I don't know. It's tough to say. I don't know if I would tell everybody all my business on Twitter. You know, I tried, even though I did have a flashy Cadillac, you know, when I played and stuff, I finally
you got... You were styling. Yeah, There's no question about it.
But, you know, that's what happened. That was going on today. Maybe I would be on Twitter right now, Facebook.
Are on Twitter. Look it in.
Yeah. Everybody's going to be calling me. They'll be tweeting me now. And they'll be expecting me to retweet. But, you see most of my my tweets... they're about where the cheapest gas is, you know, and most is always over in New Jersey, you know, and we okay. always got cheap gas over there, and they pump it for you over there too. And there's a place in Philly that does this now. Well, outside of Philly, that pumps the gas for you. But I don't know. I doubt if I'd have been on Facebook, you know, because I can't see people telling everybody about your business and stuff, you know. It's people sending text messages and stuff. I was about to get on that. In fact, they probably called me now. Well, a little late, I had to turn this thing down, I guess. But anyway, I'd rather talk. You know, don't be tweeting because I got to keep. And my finger's so big, I'm hitting the wrong.
Yeah, I was actually just thinking that how tough the phone must be for you.
Look how small the phone looks.
Yeah, they think I'm illiterate. I got the wrong words. I don't have my glasses.
Hold up the phone to your hand, like to the camera, just so
you have the camera on me.
No.
What? That is.
We've been tricking you.
Yes, you do. Okay. This is it.
Most people are just listening.
Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah. But I think it's crazy. And if I was a burglar, I would look at tweets all the time, seeing where you are. And someone go break in that house. You know, they're down on in the Caribbean somewhere. They can't get me. You know, so I break in their house. So whatever we want. You know, I'm at this restaurant. Okay, I'm gonna go get your rims off of your car while you're in there eating.
Criminal mastermind, Harold.
Yeah, I know. Seriously.
I mean, if everybody
life after football player.
Yeah, I tell you what. That's one thing I think about a lot of this stuff. All this stuff that you guys like do. You know, I was telling some people the other day. I said, when I walk into a place, I'm gonna look around and see where the exits are. If it's a lot of people, you know what I mean? Because you never know these days. You know, somebody tweeting, okay, we got that flash mob thing. You know, I want to know where the exits are so I can get out of here quickly, you know.
Harold Carmichael, true gentleman, greatest wide receiver to ever play for the Philadelphia Eagles.
The most prolific pass catcher in the history of the world.
History of the world.
Yeah! Yeah, baby.
Harold,
I like that.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Harold.
Hey, thank you guys, really. I didn't think I was going to be talking this much. You know, you guys said it was going to be short, you know. But I can't trust you guys, you know. But no, it's great, man. I really enjoyed it. You guys know I like to talk. I'm quite sure everybody knows that now. But thank you very much. You guys do a great job. And I really tell a lot of guys about when I do the tours. You guys are the best, man.
And good luck to your son, Rock.
Yeah, I'm going to rock you, dude.
The Eagles Insider Podcast will be on vacation next week, as Bo's going to be celebrating his wedding nuptials. Congrats to you and Rachel.
Thank you.
And
congratulations.
Thank you.
Special thanks to our producers, Brian Thomas, Chris Barletto. And I'm Chris McPherson, signing off for the Eagles Insider Podcast. Have a great day, everyone.